AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Okay, look, 7-8 years ago, I had to step into the fear and put a big-ass goal out there, and so I decided to start climbing all these crazy mountains around the world. It's been an absolute amazing journey, and you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've actually done 6 of the 7. I've actually been on Denali twice. I've been on climb successfully Kilimanjaro twice, but now it's Mount Everest, the biggest boy on the block, 29,000 plus, and I'm headed over there April 2020, and I'm totally keyed up. And I'm keyed up because I've been doing all this preparation. I train like an absolute bear, and really putting myself in a position of success. I'm going to be climbing with one of the top climbing outfitters in the world. Excited about that. And just the mountain has fascinated me for years, I'm sure like others, but really excited to do so. And so if I can actually pull this thing off, I'd be the first NFL player to do so. And so as we speak today, there's not that many first in the world. So I look forward to tackling that. Okay, so that's one. Two is I totally appreciate the listen on these different podcasts. I really do. And it's been an amazing journey, as I said, from not just interviewing these people, but being on the other side of the mic and really taking in their incredible stories of doing amazing things. And look, we all need to be inspired. And so if I can help provide and find more people that meet that criteria, all the better. And it just, we all need that motivation, and we all need that those words of encouragement that you can make it back relevant to your own situation and then plow forward in whatever endeavor you are trying to do. Okay, so I appreciate that. And if you want to find out anything that I have going on, you can do so at markpattisonnfl.com. I've got a book out now called Finding Your Summit, go figure. And it is essentially the playbook to what I had learned from my Hall of Fame coaches on how to emerge and do some great things in your life. It doesn't have to be mountain climbing, of course. It can be anything, but it's a plug-in that you take on these different things, these different goals, that these different strategies that I've set forth, that they set forth for me, and good things can come from that. Okay. Also on the website, you can find out more about my expedition. Obviously, I'll be going to Mount Everest, and we'll have more information about that coming up. There's an e-learning course and, of course, the podcast. And when you go to the podcast, you will find an iTunes tab. And I would be so grateful if you go in and you'd rate and review. Now, it all has to do with visibility, popularity of podcasts, because there's so many podcasts out there today that it's so easy to get lost and like, wait, where's Finding Your Summit? And I think I really do believe these stories are really amazing and incredible and can really give a lift to those people who really need it. And even if you don't, we all need to be motivated and inspired by other people to keep going. So if you'd go in and do that, I would be really, really appreciative. Okay, so let's go listen to the pod. It's going to be awesome. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another fantastic episode of Finding Your Summit. This week, I find myself in beautiful Squaw Valley, Northern California. It is so intensely beautiful, and I sit here at the table at the World Championship Spartan Fest races, which are going on this weekend, and I'm very fortunate to be in the company of Patrick Sweeney. Patrick, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. It is amazing here, isn't it? And we've got perfect weather. And Joe DeSena, the CEO of Spartan, is putting an end to that when the races start. So tomorrow is supposed to be actually be snowing and raining and about 38 degrees.
I know. So let's just set that up. You and I are sitting literally at the base of this mountain. I'm looking out the window behind you. There's all this ambient noise in the background people can hear. So sorry about that. But what we're looking at is the serenity of the mountains going up. There's trees, there's mountains, there's rocks, and it's just incredible on a sunny day. And as you said, tomorrow the snow is supposed to come in. It just seems impossible that this glorious day can turn into that tomorrow.
Oh, and I was just looking up where the gondola goes up at that granite face, and I'm thinking to myself, man, I would love to be on that rock, climbing up there, yeah, enjoying this day outside and really making the most of it. And tomorrow is just going to be 180 degrees. But as you know, Mark, that's the mountains. That's what happens, and things can turn on a dime.
Yeah, and you need to be prepared. So let's talk about that. I think this is a great segue. So you are all about trying to find the adventure within, right?
Absolutely.
So I think that's something that's an easy statement to say. You know, you can run around to the bar and go, hey, you know, find the adventure inside and go for it. But I think there's a deeper story for you that I really want to explore that really led you to this, you know, almost like live like you're dying, the Tim McGraw song.
Yeah.
And so let's get into that. You've had an incredible life. You continue to lead an incredible life. You split your time between Boston and Chamonix in France.
Absolutely.
We were just talking about that. Sounds
which is
amazing.
Even more beautiful than here.
Which I can't even imagine.
I know.
Right?
You got to come visit.
We'll
do some climbing.
I would love to do some great climbs. Yeah, so let's dial the clock back. And, you know, one of the things that really stood out for me is that, you know, you've been doing all these things, and I do want to get into a lot of those. But to me, one of the things that was so defining was that you went through and were diagnosed with leukemia.
Yeah, and that was completely life-changing, Mark. I had I was born first-generation Irish immigrant in Boston, blue-collar neighborhood. You know, my parents didn't go to college or anything like that. My dad's working three jobs, and I had a really rough time growing up, but had a bunch of traumatic events as a child that planted this seed of terror in me. And I grew up being terrified and trying to create an image for me that was the antithesis of that. So trying to put this cocoon around me. And first I thought I'd do it with sports, and I spent 6 years training for the Olympics and second in the Olympic trials, 10th in the world, rode the World Cup for 3 years. And that didn't do it. Went back to a top business school, started three different technology companies, raised over $50 million. And I'm wearing $10,000 suits, $20,000 watches, driving $150,000 cars, trying to create this armor around me because I had so much shame and guilt about the fear I felt. And then could happen to any of your listeners who are out there. And because I had this low level of cortisol, the stress hormone, going through my body and just eating away at me, like acid eating away at lead. Yeah. And I woke up one morning and went to the gym after 4 hours of teeth grinding sleep, and my arm hurt. Ignored it, you know, back to the work routine, worked for 12, 13 hours, drank 7 or 8 beers to get to sleep,
yeah,
and then woke up the next morning, hurt even worse. 3 days later, you know, the doctors in Reston Hospital were telling me they had no idea what was going on, but I had no immune system. They sent me up to Johns Hopkins.
Now, how many years ago was this?
15 years ago.
15, okay.
Yeah, and so they sent me up to Hopkins. And the guys at Hopkins, the first thing, the doctor comes in and my wife's sitting at the end of the bed. She's 6 months pregnant. Our one-year-old daughter is at her grandparents' house. Dr. McDevitt walks in the door, and you know he says, basically, are your affairs in order? And I'm not Doogie Howser, but I'm pretty sure that's doctor speak for I'm fucked.
So
you know, it was at that point when I felt a tremendous sense of regret and shame on all the stuff. Like the happiest day of my life should have been when I found out I was going to race the World Cup. And instead, I was terrified because it meant I had to get on a plane, which was one of my biggest fears. Mm. So living up to till the time I was almost 35 years old, I was living this fake life or this life of fear. And then I had the leukemia and fought it and had some amazing things happen, you know, during that process. And I went into Hopkins thinking my life was over. And in fact, really, Mark, that's when it started for me. That was the point where I realized that if I was going to live life, I had to choose courage instead of succumbing to fear all the time.
Okay, so there's a whole lot going on there.
Yeah, sorry. Try to get it out as quick as
no,
I can.
No, we're going
to
break it down. All right. So I guess the first thing that jumps off the table to me is, yeah, I guess you were driven by fear.
Yeah.
Right? And so what do you think the root of the fear was beyond your parents being hard chargers, blue-collar people, working three jobs?
Yeah.
All those types of things. I mean, where did that root itself?
So as I got into this and as I started to learn more about courage and that sort of thing, I've interviewed now over 36 neuroscientists over the past 5 years for this book, Fear is Fuel, which is coming out in January. And during that time, one thing that's really clear to me is we all have something I call a fear frontier. So before you're 10 or 12 years old, you have either an event or a series of events that you have to create a defense mechanism to. And in my instance, I saw a plane crash when I was 7 years old on the TV. And that planted that seed of terror inside me. And so two things happen when a traumatic event occurs. First, you create what's called a semantic memory, and those are just the facts. That gets written into your internal database. And it, for me, it was Delta, DC-9, 100 people died, Logan Airport, rainy day, and that was it.
And you just couldn't get over that.
Well, so that's the first thing. You get that semantic memory. The second thing you get is the emotional memory.
Yeah.
And the emotional memory in that case was death, dismemberment. Yeah. I might have lost my parents. That could have been me. And at the same time, too, I had a grandfather who was, you know, he figured the way to make me stronger was to take his belt off and put me over the bed and beat me with it. And my response to all this was to run, you know, as much as I could. I ran out of the house, you know, would go up to his hunting camp in New Hampshire. And, you know, I ran away for a day and built a lean-to in the woods. And so my defense mechanism was all fear-based, right? It was to flee. And so because of that, that became the driver of the identity I was trying to create. I wanted to create something big and strong and powerful. And it was just killing me. It was eating away at me because I never got over that fear frontier.
Yeah, so it sounds like you were building up this cocoon around yourself that was just, you know, everything on the outside looked nice and shiny, but inside the bubble, you know, the bad things, and you're just going to really escape yourself, right?
And one of the things I found is we make decisions only one of two ways. We either make a decision based on fear, and that always leads to regret and shame and usually failure, or we make a decision based on opportunity, and that's what leads to growth and fulfillment and success and happiness. And every decision I was making through most of my life was driven by fear. So the reason I wanted to start companies was because I was afraid of being insignificant. The reason I wanted to raise money was I was afraid of losing the company. You know, all these decisions were based on fear. It was never opportunity based. And that ended up almost killing me because I had that low level of cortisol just constantly streaming through my body.
Yeah. That's really interesting because a lot of my success, I mean, I think you're taking it to a deeper level, the way you're thinking about it, than maybe the way I've thought about it in the past from the standpoint of a lot of things I was doing, I was fueled by fear. And so I even today, you know, I've got Mount Everest coming up next April, and so I'm doing everything. I don't let any stone unturned until I work out and I go further and harder than anybody else, you know, that's out there. Because I don't want to have any kind of regret on the other side of it. Like if I don't make it, it was because I didn't work out 3 days in a row or something, right?
Yeah.
It's this stupid little game that I play, you know, with myself. But there's no question that I'm fueled. I have been fueled by fear. I think with maturity, I've gotten a little bit better, you know, over the years as it relates to that. But for you, you've been married for a long time, right?
Yeah,
yep.
20 years.
Yep. And so prior to this, so now you're building these companies and you've got success that's following you, and athletically you're doing well, different things. Like, how did that fear come into that relationship? Or maybe it didn't, and then it exploded at some point in time.
No, it was terrible. You know, we fell in love, and then and Kristen was great because she was there, you know, when I was making no money training for the Olympics as a rower, you know, making 20 grand a year, you're doing well.
Yeah.
And so after that, the only thing I cared about was money, right? I set a goal for 40 by 40, want to make myself a net worth of $40 million by the time I was 40 years old. Fuck everything else, right? So don't worry about my health. Don't worry about my relationship. Don't worry about my kids. Just keep moving on. And if I had continued on that path, I'm sure we probably would have been divorced by now. But when I got to that point at Hopkins and I was looking back on my life thinking this is over and feeling all this regret, I'm thinking, man, I have this amazing woman in my life. And, you know, I see her for 3 hours a week and you know, don't pay any attention to her and don't really care about her needs and tell her that when we retire, we'll be able to take that vacation. When I sell this next company, we'll go out and bring the kids there, whatever it was. And so I became significantly, when I got to the hospital, I became significantly more grateful for everything in my life, including her and the kids and just being alive. And Marcus Aurelius is part of my morning practice, right? The Stoic, he says, you know, every morning you wake up alive, thank yourself for the ones you love, for the fact that you're healthy and everything else. And I do that every morning as part of a morning routine. Mm. And she was a big driving part of that. And then uniquely enough, I decided I was going to get over that fear of flying. So I started taking flying lessons. Wow. And I got to tell you, the first one, I think I peed 4 times before I made it out to the plane. The second one, I might have pooped myself just a little, not a lot, just a tiny bit. Yeah. And but the amazing thing that happened, Mark, is once I decided to choose courage, and I'll tell you the neuroscience behind it, because there's literally a switch we can flip to choose courage. And once I decided that, my whole life changed. And by the third or fourth lesson, I fell in love with flying, right? So I got my private pilot's license. I wanted to fly in clouds, so I got my instrument rating. I got my commercial license. I'm never going to be a commercial pilot, but I want to keep learning. And now I compete in aerobatics, right? The thing that would have terrified me 15 years ago, rocketing towards the ground, pulling 5 Gs, alone in an airplane, just like the thought of it would have had me curled up in the fetal position in the corner. And now it is one of my greatest senses of fulfillment and joy and accomplishment. And all of that was locked away from me for 35 years because of fear. Hmm. And so that's why I'm doing this. That's why I wrote the book, because I wonder, for your listeners out there, what's locked away from them because of fear? What's on the other side of fear that they can't even comprehend yet? And if they don't get, it's like being at this obstacle course race here at the Spartan World Championship. You know, there's a wall, and some people, you know, look at that wall and they turn around, right? And that's what fear is. But on the other side of that wall is all your dreams, right? Is all the fulfillment, all the joy, and the fear is never as bad as we think it is.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. So, you know, part of my story is I was going through not exactly what you're going through, but a divorce, and my dad died all kind of one time. And like the way I used to operate all was, you know, like nothing was working anymore, right? And so it was just like a power shutdown. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, it was just either really a sink or a swim. And part of that sink or swim was it was having to face the reality that, you know, I might have to do this journey on my own, and my kids, are they going to love me still, and all this other stuff. Yeah. That, again, my brain was going to that point of, like, all the things that I'm going to get whacked out and I'm going to miss, they're going to be taken away. Not about the zillion things that are out there that are waiting for me if I just go take on life.
You were playing that horror movie.
I was playing the horror movie.
Yeah.
And so what I a lot of it seems like a reoccurring theme is stepping into the fear. And on the other side is greatness. And with that greatness can come possibilities, right? And from relationships that I have, you know, now, between my kids, between Doris, between doing this podcast, I never signed up for a podcast. I didn't, when I was going through the fear and then freaking out, like, where am I going to go? And I mean, I remember the night I, like the first night I moved out, and I acquired all this stuff. Now I don't have anything, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting on a bed, one bed with one dresser and one spoon. And I'm like, how in the H did I get here? Yeah. This is impossible.
Yeah.
But it was happening, right? And it was real time. And so something that you know, I say to people is, like, if you haven't had anything bad coming to you, it's probably on its way, because we all have to deal with this adversity.
You got to have those trials.
You got to have the trials. And the question is, at that point in time, you know, what are you going to do about it, and how are you going to react to that? Yeah. So now you're laying in John Hopkins Hospital, and you're going through this, and the doctor comes in, and he's saying, okay, I think it's time for you to get your affairs in order. Yeah. And, you know, you hadn't really stepped into the fear yet. You'd been on this like this high-speed train forever, you know, building companies, and your wife was just like, yeah, she's there, but not really there. So having to, obviously, at that point in time, live in the moment. But that's a whole shift. That's easy to say. Yeah. And that whole shift of, like, I'm not going to worry about tomorrow. I don't really care about yesterday. But what can I do today to elevate me? So how did you get through this whole ordeal?
So at that ordeal, I don't even think I felt about living in the present. I didn't think I felt anything about that because I had all this regret about not getting on a plane, about not being the guy who could take my one-year-old daughter to Disney World because I was too afraid, right? Just make up some excuse of why we wouldn't do it. So I was really stuck in that, in realizing the shame and realizing the regret of this life and these opportunities I had that I wasted. And I said, I want another chance, right? So the turning point for me was, and you'll appreciate this, especially next year, I read something by Edmund Hillary who said, I'm sure the power of fear, assuming you aren't rendered useless by it, can make you exceed beyond what your capability is.
I've seen that, yeah.
And so here's one of the bravest guys to ever walk this planet saying fear shouldn't be eating away at you and killing you. Fear can make you even better and can help elevate you to a whole new level. And so I saw that, and we had spent a lot of time at the Olympic Training Center working on mental training and visualization and different techniques, and it made me really fast. Obviously, I was one of the fastest guys in the world. And I said to myself, if that can make me fast, maybe it can save my life. So at Hopkins, what I focused on every waking moment was visualizing these warrior cells coming out of my sternum and attacking those leukemia cells.
Love that.
And just seeing them blasting away at that. And, you know, by the grace of God and by that visualization and you know, the docs at Hopkins, I died. No, I didn't. I died. I'm here talking to you.
My story was just going along.
Yeah,
so we just went off the cliff there.
So I got out, and when I did, I tell the story when I give keynote speeches. I walked out of Hopkins, and I would have been rushing to the next meeting, to the next thing. And my wife and I walked out, rainy November day, and it was gray and overcast in a crummy area of Baltimore. And I saw a leaf in a puddle. And I stopped and I said, you know it's cliche, but I said, wow, that's really beautiful. Like, just look at that. And I was just so filled with gratitude to be alive and to have a second chance at it that I just started noticing that stuff and started noticing my wife. And, you know, I went home with all these IVs in me and taking these drugs and everything else. And I was just, then I made that switch to being in the moment. I made that switch to making choices out of courage, even when they were uncomfortable, and to being the authentic me. You know, I got rid of the shell. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to ask you, like, at what point in time did you, two things. One, forgive yourself, right, for being the way you'd been. And then the second part of that is really jump into that little word called gratitude, attitude of gratitude, where you're really appreciating life. But the most important thing in this all this element is I'm wondering when I now put the mic to your wife, right, is like at what point in time did she come in to forgive you in a sense? Maybe that's more of a hardcore term, but where, you know, she was like, you know what, what was work going on before we ain't working. And so how can we recreate and reinvent ourselves as a couple?
Dan, Mark, I got to tell you, this is, you know, everyone, this is the ninth podcast I've done today, and everyone wants to know about the neuroscience around fear and everything. You're the first one, and I'm sitting here thinking, and I'm, you know, I'm getting moved because I remember when we went back to the house, she was terrified I was going to die, right? We never knew when I was going to be out of the woods, and people couldn't come over. I was kind of the boy in the bubble, right, for 3 months and trying to run the business from, you know, a bizarre thing happened. My COO, who I had gone to business school with at the time, he said to my wife while I was in Hopkins, he sent her an email saying, hey, it doesn't look like things are going so well. I've got another opportunity. I'm taking it. So, so you know, here I
Thanks,
am on
pal.
My deathbed. Yeah, exactly. And this dude quit. So I'm trying, you know, to get the business back in order. And she's not sure if I'm even going to live. And she's pregnant and going through all that. And you know, as the first couple of weeks went on, and I started to get stronger and she started to realize things were going well, she said, you know, are you going to go back to to these 80-hour weeks? Are you going to go back to drinking 8 or 9 beers every night? Are you going to go back to, you know, what you were doing before? And I said, no, I don't want to. And she's held me to that. There were times, especially those first couple of years, and then I sold that company and did pretty well. And I said, you know, let's go to Europe. And let's give our kids this experience of living in a different country, and that's sort of when everything changed, and we realized that we're just living this magical life now because we're authentic, and you know, she's back to being appreciated by me. I'm back to appreciating her and everything she does. And the other question you asked, Mark, was when did I forgive myself? And I've worked with this woman named Diana Chapman at the Conscious Leadership Group. She's, you know, I used to do this quarterly sessions with her, really. And one of the things she does is she said, you know, I had my first job when I was 7 years old. I was shining shoes. And then I've never not had a job since then. And she said, you've got to embrace that little boy in you. You know, when you do something like, you know, go out and play on the rock or go play, you know, on the ski slope or whatever, you've got to let go of this fact that you feel guilty that you should be working or should be writing. You should be doing something like that. So I think for a long time, and I'm probably still only 85% there. I think there's still 15% of me that hasn't forgiven or that doesn't embrace that little boy and say, hey, look, that's just who I am. And, you know, I love myself for it. So still a little bit to go on that journey, I think.
Yeah, well, I think it's okay, you know, and that's all about life is that we're always, well, hopefully we're always growing. If you're not growing, you're dying, right?
Yeah.
And learning, I think that's probably as much as anything. Even today, being invited to this pod fest, right, and coming here, and I've done a number of them today, either on me or people or I've been doing podcasts and other people, but the little nuggets I learn. I mean, one of the biggest gifts I've been given is doing exactly this. The name of my podcast, of course, is Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And, you know, you fit into all this. But really, the biggest gift has been for me to be on this side of the mic listening to guys like you. And I've got a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
And there's another guy out here that I did a podcast on last year, Casey McAllister. He's a guy that was down in Utah, a little boy, and they went to church, and they were after church, they were throwing the ball, and they were on this old rural highway, and the ball got thrown across the street, and like a little kid, he takes off, ends up getting hit by a Mack truck. Oof. And just like, I mean, one of his legs is rolling down the highway, and the other one's mangled, and so they take, so now he's here at the Spartan World Championships competing in the Beast, the toughest one that they have out here. He's got no legs. He's going to be crawling up the mountain.
Or however.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not in a wheelchair. He's crawling, right? Wow. And so for him to
Do any of us have it bad? Do we have a rough life? I mean, not a chance.
Well,
when you look at that inspiration, right?
It is inspiration, but that's also what's helped me get through my stuff. In that the gift of being able to start this podcast. Somebody else did a podcast on me, and I was like, I think I might be able to do this. And so I started. And then I come up with this theme because it's the stuff I went through and like it'd be interesting. And then out of that, you know, really pulling and extracting these stories from other people. And then that word called perspective comes in, which is maybe I don't have it as bad. And maybe I should start looking at my life a little bit differently in the way that you have shaped your life. It's funny because you're wearing this Guns N' Roses T-shirt. My buddy, Duff McKagan. Who's one of the founding? He is the founding member of that. He's the bass player for Guns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
so I got to meet him. I wear this on most of my speeches.
Well, I'm a Seattle guy, so we went to the same high school, playing on the football team, and so we've hung out plenty. And it's interesting talking to him now because, you know, he was early in the game, you know, 1920, and Guns N' Roses becomes a worldwide phenomena, and they all got on the drugs. They all went to rehab, and so him being a more mature Duff today. Basically alcohol poisoning himself. He has now gone into recovery. And so, you know, the story goes on and on and on. This isn't about Guns or Duff, but it's just another case of somebody who takes something in excess and just almost ruins, you know, themselves, but then is able to have some self-realization and get rid of those demons. And it was hard work. Just I'm sure, you know, for you it was hard work, even after you came out of the hospital, to actually unwind that ticker that you have, that you know, driven, you know, you're on it, you're going after it, you know, you know, what's the next million, what's the next market, what's the next company that you can build, and like, you know, a big breath and like maybe there's a different way to live life. And that seems like what you have fallen into.
And if you could imagine at that time, you know, being part of this whole high-tech community and venture community where your identity is entrepreneur / venture CEO and people saying, you know, what are you talking about? You're going to move to Europe, or what are you talking about? You're going to start adventuring and, you know, start doing the summits up by a bike. And that's ridiculous. And so all this stuff, in what tribe you were in, which was a completely negative one, right? Yeah. A really toxic one, and you're getting all this negative feedback, and you got to rely on people around you who believe in you and who believe in your vision and your genius and what it takes for you to be happy. One of the things that the reason I wrote this book, Mark, is when I started getting into the neuroscience behind how it works, I realized if I had known that, maybe flying wouldn't have been locked away from me for 35 years. And so if I can share that with other people, because it's only been the past really 6 to 8 years we've had the technology to figure out what's going on inside the brain. And the stuff is fascinating. Like, there's some stuff that won't be released for a couple of years because it has to go through this archaic peer review process. But I put it in the book. And people can look at it and realize how the brain works. And when they can get over some of this stuff. And they can change their life without having to go through a near-death experience or without having to go through the divorce or a parent dying or some other rough event, you know, drugs or alcohol. And they can use that knowledge to hopefully find their courage and find their adventure within.
Yeah, interesting. So let's give and draw out a couple examples of... So there's this cross between this neuroscience that you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, the psyche of any person of having that mind shift, right? Which then fuels this thing that as I propel forward, you're not going to fall back into old habits.
Yeah.
So help me out there.
So the real key and the first step to that, and the reason I say we have to find more fear, you know, you hear people saying, oh, you've got to overcome your fear, you've got to avoid your fear, you've got to get around your fear, which is the complete opposite of what we should be doing.
Yeah.
We have to find more fear every day. If we can scare ourselves every day, and it doesn't have to be jumping out of a plane. It can be, you know, getting up and making a toast at lunch because you're afraid of public speaking. It can be taking a cold shower because everyone says, oh, I can't take a cold shower. It can be anything that scares you, because what you want to find out about yourself is what happens to your body when the amygdala, that little gland at the base of your brain, that lizard brain that's running a piece of 2-million-year-old software, starts to take over and get you into survival. Because we all have these tells in our body that are always the same. So for me, I get these bats in my stomach, not butterflies, like these big angry bats.
Yeah.
And my hands get sweaty and my jaw gets tight. And so I understand that. So once you start to recognize that, you know that that's the fear cocktail. That's adrenaline, DHEA, cortisol, all these enzymes coursing through your body because the amygdala is activated. And what that means is two things. One, you're going to make a decision based on fear if you pay attention to the amygdala and you let it stay in charge. And two, you've got an opportunity for something good to happen. It might be personal growth. It might be something that other people aren't willing to do, but there's an opportunity every time you feel that. So recognizing that is going to keep you from when Darcy comes home mad or something and yells at you and you feel those fear tells, you're going to immediately say, okay, that's the amygdala, and now I'm going to deal with it. Or when your boss sends you that email or a client, you know, says something terrible, and you feel that and you say, okay, that's not so bad. That's just fear talking. I get it. So I'm going to embrace that. I'm going to move towards it. I'm not going to run from it. I'm not going to fight back. I'm not going to do one of those knee-jerk reactive decisions that I'm going to regret later. So the more we get to know our fear tells, the more we can stop and say to ourselves, okay, that's that 2-million-year-old piece of software trying to protect us and trying to keep us from, you know, any remote possibility of not passing our genes on to the next generation. Because it's all it cares about. So that's the first exploration. That's the reason we have to find more fear every day.
Yeah, and we're not talking about, you know, if you're in L.A. going across the 405 at rush hour, you know, we're not talking about that kind of fear, but some of the stuff that you've done is pretty incredible. You know, I was looking down, you've been You know, you're rock climbing, you've skydived, you're swimming with sharks, you're doing all those things. So on your maybe you don't call this, but on your bucket list of fears,
yeah,
right. What is still out there for you?
On my bucket list of fears,
and I'll tell. Let me while you sit and let that marinate for a second and figure that out. One of my stupid fears, but I have a fear.
Yeah.
Is bees. I was traumatized.
Oh man, you definitely have to come to my house. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen. When I was a young kid, I was with my buddy Dean Baker, and we were about eighth grade, and we took a football, and we saw these bees coming out of the rocks, and so we started throwing it. And finally they said, you know, hell with this.
Yeah.
So they rallied their guys
against
inside.
These little punks.
Yeah, and so I was running down the street like Winnie the Pooh, you know, all the boos coming after that, hightailing it.
You didn't have to run. You didn't have to run fast. You just had to outrun Dean.
Yeah, well, Dean went left, I went right, and they all went right. So I'm the one who got stung in the ass and the face, and I got swollen all up, and it was awful. And since that time, I've just had a hard time with bees, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's my little fear story. But, you know, for you... You know, I know you've been checking a lot of these things off now over the years, and you've, you know, like re-merged in this new place, splitting your time between the States and France and Europe. And your kids are how old now?
16, 14, and 13.
14 and 13. So they go to school full-time where?
In France.
In France.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, so I'm back and forth to the States, and then we're all in the States during the summer.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we come back to Boston during the summer.
Yeah, that's
Colorado.
Awesome. I love Boston.
Yeah, it's a great city.
Yeah. My roommate for the Saints, Steve Trapello, who tragically died, went to Boston College, and he grew up in South Philly, or South Boston.
Southie.
So he was a Southie, so I'd go up there and visit him, and there was Joey and Mikey and all these guys.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember my Little League team, I tell this to people all the time, they get a kick out of it. It's, you know, it was Hubba, Zone, Fitzy, Johnny Fitz, and Sully, and Sully. Right? That's the
And by the way, they told me if I needed anything, just let them know, like a camera or TV, and they'd have.
You know, shit falls off the truck all the time, Mark.
Apparently.
You know, people don't realize that.
Yeah, it was great. But anyway, so again, going back to, you know, where you sit today in this new lifestyle and trying to be responsible about having kids and having a wife and everything, but at the same time, also stepping out into the fear and doing things that really move you and inspire you in the way that you can then turn around and inspire others.
So I'd say I definitely have bucket list items. And one of the fears I have is, I think, probably complacency. And I never want to get to the point where... everything's so comfortable that I'm either bored or that I'm not getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. So at 50 years old, I'm climbing the best I've ever climbed in my life. And I've got a goal for the next 10 years, which is pretty audacious for my level right now and where I want to go. And so it's that stuff that keeps me scared or it keeps me on edge. I've got, you know, I want to go put on a dry suit and dive between the two continents in this trench between Iceland and you know, you can actually literally dive down this crack, this fissure between the two continents.
Yeah.
And the water's like, you know, it's 20 degrees, but it's crystal clear for 500 feet. So, you know, I mean, I've got great things on the bucket list like that. But the fears I have now and the things that I look out for and the things I'm trying to be conscious of are you know, being a father and not being a father that gets their kids out of their comfort zone and that does things that I know is going to be of service to them instead of being a father that, you know, people say, oh, he's a good father and be concerned about what others think, which is so many people I see doing that in the U.S. especially, right? And trying to give their kids everything or paying $2 million to get them into Harvard and make their life easier and, you know, all that nonsense that we've heard about.
Yeah, I think a lot of it gets down to, at the end of the day, I've got two daughters, one 20, another one 23, and, you know, I think it's about being an involved dad, not being necessarily a dad who empowers kids to go do other things. You know, that's just my own two cents. But I mean, I totally appreciate it. You know, I've had people say to me, go, Mark, you know, God, you've done so many things, and I have done some cool things and playing in the NFL and climbing mountains and businesses and stuff. But when you put that, that's really just like one half of one sheet over here.
Yeah.
And I've got this whole book over here. And when you start saying, like, look at all the things you haven't done, like diving between the two continents or rock climbing, you know, up. Whatever, you know, it just doesn't matter.
El Capitan, yeah.
El Capitan, yeah. I mean, it just doesn't matter. It's just like, and that's kind of where I've had this shift, and it took me a long time to get there because I was I was playing it safe when I was when I lived in Seattle and everything seemed to be all hunky dory. You know, I can remember distinctly walking out, and I lived in this neighborhood where you could it was this flat street, and nobody had any fences between them, and so all the grasses kind of ran together, and the paper would always be delivered on the front sidewalk there, and so you'd see the people walk out and get the paper and walk back in. It's like a TV series, and yeah. I go back today and I see the same people going out and picking up that paper, and I looked at my life, I'm like, I can't do that. I will die. That will kill me. Yeah. And so something's got to happen. And so a year and a half ago, I moved to Sun Valley, Idaho, and that's like not anything revolutionary or anything, but I think so many people get comfortable in where they're at, and versus, you know, again, going back to that magic word that you keep bringing up called fear. Yeah. Like, what happens if you step into the unknown, and, you know, what amazing things can happen? Or maybe looking at it the other way, you know, you can always change it back.
Yeah.
You can always go back.
And let me stop you right there, Mark, because you just said something that I think your listeners need to understand. You moved 2 years ago to Sun Valley. I moved 8 years ago to Chamonix. You know, we made it work this way. And if any of you out there are saying, God, I wish I could do that, you're making a decision based on fear. Don't say, I wish I could do that. Say, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do that. Make that decision based on opportunity and know that like me, like Mark, it'll work out for you. Because as soon as you're saying, I wish I could do that, that's a fear-based decision that you're not even willing to try.
So tell me what you, I've been bouncing around all these podcasts, so I want to make sure I understand this. Are you out there helping people today through a platform? I know I saw your website.
Yeah.
You know, are you inviting them in, YPO groups, those types of things, right?
Yep.
You're working with them on how they can team bond better by climbing and
No. It's more. It's not team and bonding necessarily. It's more specifically for YPO. I do about 20 events for YPO every year, and it's about creating a culture of courage. How they can help either in their family or their employees create this culture of courage. The book I've got, which comes out in January, is called Fear is Fuel. You can pre-order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I do keynote speeches probably 2 to 3 times a month now to corporate or associations. And my goal is to get millions of people to the point where they can learn to use fear as fuel. And I just did an educational program for Spartan, which is 14 episodes. It's a it's a tape. We taped it in the Atacama Desert, which was awesome. It's just incredible. And that'll be coming out soon. So, you know, you talk about the bucket list things, and I've biked across Alaska in January. I've biked to the top of Kilimanjaro. I biked to the highest mountain in Europe, Mount Elbrus. I biked to Everest Base Camp, and all this stuff I've done because I wanted to push my body. After I survived leukemia, I wanted to see what it could do, and that was for me to figure out, because I never knew how amazing life could be once you push beyond that fear boundary, that wall we talked about. So I want to keep doing those things for me, but my mission and why I'm here and how I can change the world is to help other people realize that too. Because literally, Gandhi said, hate isn't the enemy, it's fear. Mm. And since 9/11, particularly, if you look at a bunch of surveys that have been done about American people, fear is at an all-time high. And sadly, politicians and marketers and other people use that as a weapon against us. And so if we're armed, if we have these tools, if we understand how the brain works, it'll change the world. Yeah. And so that's my mission.
Yeah, you see that all the time with the politicians, right?
Oh, that's it's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
They're driving such a wedge in between us.
It is. Well, let's end this on a positive note,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So where can people find you?
So my website is pjsweeney.com or thefearguru.com, either one. On Twitter, it's at pjsweeney. On Instagram, it is thefearguru. And then LinkedIn is Patrick Sweeney.
Right on. All right, buddy. We're going to put this in the show notes. And
okay.
So, yep, yeah, be there. And
I want you to make a commitment to me that you will do.
Amen.
We'll do another podcast, and we'll do it in Chamonix at the top of the Aiguille de Midi, and then go do Mont Blanc or Mount Tacoul or something.
I'm so down for that.
Something fun.
Yeah, that's an easy sell for me.
All right.
That's an easy sell. All right. There he is, Patrick Sweeney, Fear Guru.
Thank you so much.
All right, bye. Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life, and I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great. And remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.